So, the subject of the talk this evening is... Let's make something up. Okay, what comes up? Just the art of freedom. Freedom. Are you free? Sometimes people ask you that. This weekend, are you free? And what do you answer? You say, no, I'm very expensive, tell them. But people have all this idea of wanting to be liberated, wanting to be free. What does that mean? And a lot of times people say, Ajahn Brahm, you're a monk, you have so many rules. You can't do this and you can't do that. Don't you ever feel that, you know, that everything is just really tight? You live in a monastery, and the monastery got some walls, but there's many openings in those walls. And it's interesting that Bodhinyana Monastery, where I spend most of my time, we have walls and fences, but actually just a front wall anyway, just like Mr. Trump wants to do. So we can design some walls for him. We know how to build walls. But just down the road from us, 6 kilometers from Bodhinyana Monastery, there is Carnet Prison Farm. And they don't have any walls. And that's why sometimes people, they're looking for monastery and they can't find it, and they just go past and they just go to the prison and they ask, are there any monks in here? Fortunately, I say, well, actually, sometimes there is. This evening, there is a monk in the prison. We've got a monk there teaching meditation, but he's not staying in there, just for a short while. So we go and teach meditation in there. But we have a wall. They don't. What is the meaning of freedom? You're monks. Can't you just be free and go where you want? And there is the problem, to go where you want. So first of all, the wanting, that never allows you to be free. How much more do you want? Sometimes I wanted so much when I was young, and now look at me, I've got no savings, I've got no superannuation, I've got no retirement plan, I've got no assets, I've got no insurance except for Medicare, what everyone else gets. I've got no assets, no family, I've got nothing. Oh, what bliss. Because sometimes people think the other way around, that the more you have, the more free you are. But is that really true? Because sometimes when I look at the world and thinking we're all trying to get ahead. I've already got a head. One head's enough, it costs me enough problem. But what do you really want in life? And if you get it, then what happens? A lot of times people say, oh, I just want to get this. And I watch those cases of people who win the lotto. Do you really, really want to win the lottery? You know, some monks, they do know the numbers, but, you know, just if I gave you the numbers, what would happen to you? Are you interested? Forget it. There was one of the stories read in, so people send me these really interesting stories. They just wanted, they won the lottery in the UK, I think it was £49 million. So what would you do if you won £49 million? This person, they decided that so they buy their dream home, a huge mansion in Sussex, in the countryside, just peaceful, and really sort of whatever they wanted to build, whatever sort of furnishings in there they could put in there. And they built this big mansion. 1 year later, the owner sold it at a considerable loss. And this was the important thing, the article which they wrote afterwards, why they sold their mansion. And it was because that it was breaking up their family. The husband was in one part of the house, the wife was in another part of the house, the children, they didn't have their own room, they had their own suite of rooms. So they never saw one another. They never met. And so they were growing further and further apart from one another. And so she sold it, realized you don't need a big mansion for happiness. They bought this tiny house. And they bought the tiny house where they would see each other many times each day. And that led me on to some of the most wonderful moments of my early life as a monk in northeast Thailand, 45, 46 years ago, where the community was dirt poor, subsistence farming. But I remember this experience which are etched in my brain forever, that's going into the forest. There was a monastery, just a new monastery, and they're having some big celebration, and I just went off for 1 or 2 hours through the forest, and in a clearing, it was like some fairy story, but it was true, it was real, that in the clearing there was a family, very poor family, built a simple wooden hut on stilts with a thatched roof. And I was just watching without being seen, seeing the family laughing and playing jokes, and the laughter of the kids was something which I never heard when I grew up. Real joyful stuff, playing with one another. They had nothing except time to play, to love, to care for one another. It was a small little family, dirt poor. And I remember just one of the other occasions of just the beauty of simplicity, when what do you really want? And this was the case where going into the village one evening, and no electricity, no radios, certainly no TV, certainly no internet. And in the upper story of these wooden huts, again thatched with grass, you'd see the whole family sitting around an oil lamp. An oil lamp was just the top of a toothpaste tube floating in kerosene. And under the top of the toothpaste tube, the hole, they'd put a rag and they would light it. And that would give them enough light to see, and also the smoke would keep away the mosquitoes. So it's very efficient. But what I remember seeing was this semicircle of faces of all ages and genders, from very old grandmas and great-grandmas and grandparents and little kids, talking to each other every evening, telling these old jokes and funny stories, which they told so many times, you know, to one another. Such as, because when I was telling this story in Thailand a week or two ago, I was reminiscing with one old friend, which I met in a monastery in the far northeast of Thailand. And it was for those, there's no Thai people, people here, Ajahn Juan's monastery, Putok. And when I went there, I was meaning to stay for a few days. And he said, oh no, you should go to this other monastery a little bit further in the jungle where there were wild elephants. and an elephant had come in to the monastery. And when elephants, wild ones, when they really roar, wow, they're very loud. And one of the monks in there was so afraid he jumped out of the window of the hut, which is always like one story up. So he's very lucky not to damage himself. And anyway, that this monk said, "Do you want to go to see the elephants?" I said, "Yeah." "You're not scared?" I said, "No." He said, "Are you sure?" I said, "Yes." And that's where he told me the story of the monk who wasn't afraid of tigers. And this monk, this is old tales from the forests, of the literally jungles many years ago, the monk who wasn't afraid of tigers. He was wandering from place to place, and when he came to the village, you have to check in at the village with the headman first of all. And he said, "I'm just wandering monk, I'm going to stay here close by in the forest overnight." And the headman said, "Don't do that. There's a tiger, a real tiger, who's been eating many of the water buffaloes and also, unfortunately, some of our children. It's really dangerous. Don't do it." And he said, "You can stay in our village." He said, "No, I'm a monk, I don't stay in villages. I'm not afraid of tigers. In fact, I really want to see the tiger to test, you know, my meditation." So it was a monk who was not afraid of tigers. And even Ajahn Chah used to tell me, he said, "You don't need to be afraid of tigers, because there's no evidence at all that a tiger has ever eaten a monk." And I would say, there would not be evidence, would there? The monk wouldn't be alive to tell, and the tiger won't confess. I was always a bit dubious. But anyway, this monk said, "No, I'm not afraid of tigers." So, okay, so they took him the path out of the village, and just through the jungle, you could actually see where the tiger path crossed. He said, "This is the tiger path. If you really want to, this is a nice place for you to spend the night." "Yes," he said, "tonight I'm going to face my demons, the tiger and my fear." It's what real monks do, they really face the anyway, that's what this monk thought. And so he put up his mosquito net umbrella. They have this monk equipment in Thailand, an umbrella, which, you know, you can actually keep you dry from any rain, but also a mosquito net which you drape around it, you know, to stop, you know, the mosquitoes coming in, which can keep you awake at night, and there are hundreds of them. And obviously there's malaria around, so it's important to look after your health. So there he was, his mosquito net umbrella. But I remember many times, you know, it's weird, but when you're actually in that mosquito net, even you see snakes slither past, you know, you sleep on the floor, on the forest floor, you don't feel afraid. For some reason, that feeling of the mosquito net, it's only very thin, gives you some sense of security. And I always remember just Ajahn Chah himself telling me, if you're in the jungle, in your mosquito net at night, the main danger is like a baby elephants. Because baby elephants are very playful. And they said sometimes they'll put their trunk, I remember Ajahn Chah telling me this, they'll put their trunk under the edge of your mosquito net just to find out what's inside. And he told me, he said, if that happens, bang on the sensitive part of their trunk. That's not very compassionate and kind. That'll hurt them. He said, but you have to do that, said Ajahn Chah, because then they'll run away. Because if you keep playing with them, the mother elephant, who's very close by, will come, and she won't ask any questions. She will squash you. And I remember seeing these huts which, in this place in the very northeast of Thailand, where there was huts that had been built in the forest, and they had been flattened, like over, flattened by some sort of, steamroller? And by elephants. So sometimes the elephants, they didn't like people, so they would squash you. So he said that's, but anyway, going back to the monk who wasn't afraid of tigers, he started meditating late at night, in the evening. Meditating. And it gets very quiet in the jungle. First of all, the first part of the night, it's, you know, the cicadas make a racket. Once they start to calm down, everything gets very peaceful and dark in the jungles. You can't see very much, but you can hear. And that's when the monk, he was doing his meditation. In Thailand, they do a meditation, they use a little, they call it a mantra. Instead of breathing in peace, breathe out, let go. It's breathe in, bud, breathe out, to, buddho, buddho, along with the breath. If you come to any Thai monks here, that's what they often do, the buddho with the breath. When I first came here, I tried that with many Australians, and they didn't like that at all. So then I tried something a bit more radical. I told them, as you breathe in, say the word shut, as you breathe out, up. Shut, shut. Along with the breath. That didn't work. And then there was another one which they used to do, which was, as you breathe in, I will die, breathe out, that's for sure. I will die, that's for sure. And they did the same, they started laughing. So that's when I got, no, breathe in, peace, breathe out, let go. But this fellow was breathing in, bud, breathing out, do, bud, ho, along with the breath. And you get very calm and peaceful, really still. And that's when he started hearing a jungle animal coming out. Buddha, Buddha. As it came closer, he could hear it crunching the twigs and the leaves and the branches. He realized it was quite a big animal. Buddho, 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 buddho. As it came even closer, coming in this direction. Buddho, 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 buddho. And he said, he had a flashlight, he shone the flashlight, and it was this huge monster tiger. And it's amazing when people get really frightened like that, you don't know in reactions. He didn't know how he got out from underneath that mosquito net, but he was out and running. And he wasn't chanting Buddho, Buddho anymore. He was chanting, tiger, 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 tiger. And he was running. Now there's a good reason why monks are not allowed to run. These robes do not have buttons or zips. Velcro had not been invented. So when you try running in these robes, they tend to fall off. And I know that sometimes people are really, they've never done it to me, but apparently they've done it to some monks. They ask on the aircraft, you know, what do monks wear under their robes? And the answer is, nothing. So when these robes fall off, we call it bare awareness. Not hiding anything. Open for inspection. No secrets. And so this monk was running through the village. You know, they realized it was the monks had a bald head. And just saying, tiger, tiger, tiger. And everybody sort of came out to have a look and started laughing because he had no clothes on at all. And that's what happens when a monk who was not afraid of tigers. My story, when I was in the jungle once, because I knew that story, and just, you know, some of those animals are big. I was in the jungle one night meditating and hear the sound of an animal coming. You can't see it. So what do? You know, just meditating, just very peacefully. So use your mindfulness, your awareness, to listen very carefully, to try and find out if that's a big animal or a small animal. Because there's many small animals in the forest, like mouse deer. They're so cute. Little civet cats, like possums. Beautiful little animals in that forest. And anyway, I was sitting there and heard this animal coming. And I thought, oh, that's only a small animal. Because, you know, it wasn't making that much noise. But then as it came closer, I realized, actually, it was not really a small animal. It was probably a medium-sized animal. You know, it could have been just, like a civet cat can be quite big. And then as I was listening very carefully, being really aware, you know, training mindfulness, I couldn't see anything, just going by the sound and just assessing with my wisdom, how big is that animal? And then as it came closer, it was a big animal. And I started getting a bit sort of concerned because, again, those big animals, sometimes there's bears in the forest, and the bears are some of the most dangerous because they can sometimes go a bit crazy and just attack you for no reason. So then, as I was listening, that was a big animal. And I started getting, what should I do? Because this is serious business, you know, I don't want to lose my life. And so, even those days I was very thin, there's nothing much to eat anyway. Not like today, I'd be in big trouble when they see a fat monk, there's a big meal in there. About this animal. And I did have a flashlight and I got the flashlight out. I was scared, what should I do? And I did the flashlight. You know what I saw? I saw it, it was very clear. This tiny mouse. So small, and that was what was... Was that making the big noise? It wasn't making the big noise, but this I realized, my perception, what fear does. It takes a small noise and it exaggerates and exaggerates. And I couldn't believe how a monk who'd been meditating, who's supposed to be smart and wise, could actually see the cause of this, what I thought was a huge tiger, was actually a small mouse. But I learned from that what fear does to you. Fear actually exaggerates things and it stops you being happy. So a lot of times the fear of what is going to happen in the future, the fear of even like pain. So often, he's not here right at the moment, thank goodness, but the man who, I saw him, he took out his own teeth. He was Bodhinyana Monastery. He staying there and he had a toothache. So he thought, you know, well, going to dentist, have you ever been to the dentist? You have to make an appointment and you have to wait and sometimes just do a checkup and so, okay, I think you need to have something and then you have to go next day and you have to pay a lot of money. And so this fellow decided, you know, stop all the messing around. And I saw him coming back from our workshop with one of his teeth in a pair of pliers with blood on it. He'd taken out his own tooth. Can you do that? I wouldn't recommend it, but this fellow, he told me how he did that. He said, well, first of all, when I decided to take out my own tooth, that didn't hurt. When I walked to the workshop, that never hurt. When I picked up a pair of pliers, that didn't hurt. When I put the jaw of the pliers on my tooth, that never hurt. When I wiggled it, that hurt for about 2 or 3 seconds, that's all. And then after it came out, it'll hurt a little bit, but not that much. That's how he did that, by staying in the present moment and not having fear. I thought that was pretty cool. Thinking about it is the biggest problem. So to be free of fear is one of the great freedoms which we have if we choose to take it. When we think about it, that is the biggest problem. We think about the operation. We think about the separation from our comfort zone. We keep thinking, and we like the mouse, we exaggerate nearly all the time how it's going to be. Fear makes a mouse sound like a tiger. It's not that big. So little by little, we know freedom from fear. Can you do that? What are you afraid of? After a while, especially as a monk, we learn how not to be afraid of anything. The only thing we're afraid of is fear itself. Fear of losing something. If you lose something, yay! You've got less things to worry about. Fear of what people say about you. What people think, that's one of the biggest fears in the world. Your reputation. I've been trying to lose my reputation for years. So no one wants to listen to my talks and I can live a nice, peaceful, simple life. But I don't know, the more I try to lose my reputation, the stronger it gets. I actually once told a story some time ago about what happened when I sort of made a confession once. Right here, sitting here, it was a time when there was many monks were misbehaving. Time when monks had mistresses. And I made my confession. Because honesty is always the best policy. And if you hide things, oh, that causes you so much sickness and tension. One day you're going to get found out. So I decided to confess. I said that I had spent some of the most wonderful moments of my life in the loving arms of another man's wife. I did that. We kissed, we hugged, we loved each other. And she had a husband, not me. Was that bad?
Don't give it away, John.
Because that woman who had a husband was called my mother. Her husband was my dad. I was her son. I spent many of the most wonderful times of my life in the loving arms of another man's wife, my mum. So you put it like that, you can see just how people just jump to conclusions far too quickly without all the evidence. But anyway, just when we're not afraid, especially what I often say, not afraid of making mistakes in life. That's one of the big things. But when we're afraid of making mistakes, we make more mistakes. But when we actually are confident that we're as good as other people, that we've got as much as other people have, that we don't need to improve, that we can be at ease with ourselves, then we find we're not under the control of fear, trying to live up to somebody else's ideas. You know, when I started off this talk about freedom, you know, when we want something else, we're not free. When you want something more, you can't enjoy what you already have. Free just to enjoy what you have right now. Yeah, it's not the best, but you know, it's always good enough. Recall the times you felt the most freedom in your life so far. When were those moments you felt so content? And you will notice those are moments when you didn't want anything, you didn't need anything, and it wasn't perfect. You know, you could have been sort of just by yourself, just by the ocean, watching the sunset. Or it could have been in some park somewhere. Or it could have been like when people do retreats over at Bodhinyana Monastery or Jhana Grove, sitting outside the kitchen, just having a cup of tea. Seeing so content, happy to be here. with what you have, with who's around you. It's not perfect, but it's good enough to have moments of freedom from fear, freedom from want, freedom from even having to seek peace, because peace is there. You don't seek it over here, over there, somewhere else. You find it right here, and it's inside of you. It's when I was in Thailand, I told the stories of the thousand-petaled lotus. It's one of the most wonderful stories, because it just shows just how in each one of you, no matter who you think you are, or how damaged, how much pain you've had, how much difficulty you've had in life, the thousand-petaled lotus, on the outside, the lotus is serrated, it is dusty, it is dirty. If you look at a lotus closed up at night time, it doesn't look there could be anything promising or beautiful or fragrant or refined inside at all. But you all know that as the lotus opens, inside the most delightful, beautiful petals with enormous fragrance. So, you know, the job of the spiritual life, especially meditation, especially kindness, is to open you out, to see what's inside. Not to have a goal to go somewhere else or get somewhere else or improve yourself. To me, that's always wasting time. Wasting time trying to improve what's on the outside, rather than finding out what's on the inside. And to see just how beautiful you can be inside. And as you open up a lotus, that lotus simile, a thousand-petal lotus, is opened up by the morning sun, by its light and its warmth. And as that light and warmth stays on that lotus, little by little it opens up more and more and more. That stands for, the light always stands for awareness, mindfulness. And the warmth always stands for kindness, compassion. So if you're kind to yourself, and if you are aware, those two together open you out. And you find out what is inside. You don't need anything. It's the most wonderful thing. You don't need to change. You don't need to get rid of even, please excuse me, sicknesses and damage. Right inside of you is the most beautiful lotuses. When you understand that, sometimes people always seek happiness somewhere else, seek contentment to fix this up, to fix that up, instead of just standing your ground, staying where you are, and realizing just how much beauty you can see and find deep inside of you. Oh, what was one of the stories at a meditation retreat down in Jhana Grove next to our monastery a couple of years ago? This gentleman came, and I did, I make mistakes often. If I didn't make mistakes, then I wouldn't have so many stories. And my mistake at this time, this fellow came, and I just judged him, just stereotyped him, because he was big, he was, a bit messy hair, and had tattoos all over him. And I'd never seen him here before, and straight away when I saw him, I thought that he'd gone to the wrong place. I said, the prison is about 6 kilometers up the road. This is the meditation center. I actually said that, just how stupid I was. And what he told me, he said, no, look, I've booked in for the retreat. And I checked the list, hey, his name was on there, he was on the retreat. And I thought, well, you know, booked in, I don't know, I don't take the bookings, I don't know how he got on, but anyway, give him a chance. And it was him, on that retreat, he was the star meditator. I always remember when he came for an interview and he told me what he'd been up to when he was meditating. Because in those deep meditations, you really do go inside. You go deep inside yourself, the body just vanishes, the body relaxes and just disappears. And you go to these beautiful lights and just go right in the center of those and you get really so much bliss and ecstasy. And, you know, I don't sort of confirm these experiences of others easily, but when he was recounting them to me and I was asking him questions and ticking all the boxes, I said, wow, well done. You got into one of the jhana states and you were the last person I ever expected on this retreat. That's expectations, okay? We always, you know, judge people we shouldn't do. We judge ourselves and whenever we do, we get into big trouble. That was my big mistake. And when he just managed to get into beautiful states of mind. And it just confirmed for me just that every human being, if you can just be peaceful, be kind, don't judge, you become very still. Why do we judge? It's again through fear. Fear, control, judging. But when we don't have any fear, we don't judge people. Especially we don't judge ourselves, your abilities or lack of abilities. How do you know? So give it a try and see what you can do. See how peaceful and pure and blissful and fragrant and profound is what's deep inside of you. Then you can be free, really free, free of your body. What gender are you? That's only your body. How old are you? Young? That's just your body. How sick? How healthy? That's your body stuff. Is there more than just the body? Of course there is. Huge amounts. And sometimes that's the body is just the outermost petal of the lotuses. And they have to take all the damage from the wind and the storms of life. And sometimes we do get bruised and wounded and scarred on the outside, but deep inside your emotional world, the world which you can sometimes touch, but sometimes can be a bit afraid of, a world which is a bit unknown, and we always go somewhere else instead of going inside. And where we can, just instead of going somewhere else, just stay here and allow your lotus to open up. And you'll be amazed what's inside. All these people, these, I call them like heroes, inspirations. You wonder, how can anybody in such pain, in such difficulties, be able to smile so much? And that smile is not just a smile of happiness, of indulgence, or because you've won the lotto, or your football team has won, or because you've fallen in love with somebody else or something. This is actually just joy from within, from deep within. Not coming from outside of you. Not dependent upon other people, or drugs, or alcohol, or something. Oh, you know, it's great when you get those sources of happiness and bliss. So often that people think you must be on drugs. What was that anecdote about visiting UK some years ago, and I was invited to a ceremony in a prison. Someone had donated a big Buddha statue in one of the open prisons in UK. And that inside that prison we invited for this ceremony to install this big Buddha. And I was just getting so inspired. Yeah, a Buddha statue, symbol of peace and acceptance and friendliness and openness, of non-harm, of non-judgment. And when that sort of Buddha statue was put there and was walking around, you do this walking around three times with candle, incense and flowers, I was just getting so high, just on inspiration of what was happening there. And I still remember these two prisoners. They were waiting for the feast and the supplied by the donors afterwards. But they would just hang out, get the ceremonies over as quick as possible to get to the grub, the food. And so they were waiting, but they were looking, seeing what was going on. And I saw them looking at me and saw one of them point to me and say to his friend, "See that monk? He's on the gear." And I heard that and I remembered that because that's the only way they could explain the happiness and the smile. It was on some sort of drugs. But of course, you know, I haven't taken drugs for, even then, you know, I'd never took drugs as when I was growing up, maybe alcohol when I was growing up, as I was young and stupid. But this was all natural happiness, joy coming from within. And this was actually that power of the mind to see just how beautiful things can be inside of you. You don't need to look for it anywhere else. The happiness deep within. You just need to stop and let the mind go inside. To be able to stop. Remember, another little anecdote. There was this young novice monk in Thailand a long time ago when I'd just come to Australia. No, it must have been about 34, 35 years ago. And the monk, Ajahn Chah, my teacher, you can read some of his books, but actually some of those books which you read and all those great teachings, they are just filtered. It's just like when they, you know, dig sort of gold ore out of the ground, there's so much of it is actually not gold, they have to throw that away, and it's only a small amount is these lovely nuggets which they could refine and sell. And Ajahn Chah's talks were just like that. Most of them were just so boring. They droned on for hours. And I say that because I respect him enormously as my teacher. But it was worth it because every now and again he would say something just so profound, so amazing. Just like I mentioned during the meditation about, you know, the two types of religions. One which bends the truth to fit your faith. And the other one which bends your faith to fit the truth. Which one would you like to follow? Sometimes people bend the truth to fit their faith because it feels comfortable, they don't feel challenged. But that is just ignorance and stupidity. Instead, we are willing to bend our faith to fit the truth of our own experience. Weird, but you can do things. You may not believe it, but if you bend your beliefs to fit the truth, amazing how free you can be. I shouldn't be healthy, but you are. I shouldn't be living so long, but you are. I shouldn't be happy, but you are. Goes against some of what other people tell you. So that's one of the reasons why it's great to be able to bend faith, dogma, beliefs, to fit the truth of what's possible in this world. But anyway, Ajahn Chah was going on and on and on and on. I don't know if I told this last week, but there is an organization now for people who talk too much. Like, you know, people who drink too much. You know, it's called it's a therapy group. On and on and on and on and on anonymous. I said that last week? Yeah, okay, some of them heard it anyway somewhere. Most of you have forgotten. But anyway, he was going on and on and on and on and on and on. And there's this poor little novice there. And he kept on thinking, I'm getting bored. I want to go to bed. I'm not like a tough monk. I'm only about 10, 11, 12 years of age or whatever. And he started thinking, when is the teacher going to stop? When is he going to stop? When is he going to stop? When is he going to stop? And that became like a mantra to him. He kept on repeating it. When is Ajahn Chah going to stop? And insight, understanding, the way to go inside is turning it around, doing it different. Just like when I gave that talk years ago at an astronomy club, when somebody says, when I look out into the stars at night, my beliefs, my religions are challenged. They're looking through the small end of a telescope out there into the Milky Way, into the universe, and how big it is, and how hard it is to comprehend. And then I said, well, what if you do it the other way around? You look through the big end of a telescope to the small end and see who's watching, who's looking at the universe, who's looking at the stars. Look the other way, I mean inside rather than out there. That can be challenging, especially to science. But anyway, this particular novice, he turned it around. Instead of, when is the teacher going to stop? He thought, when am I going to stop? And he stopped. Stop thinking. Stop moaning. Stop. When he opened his eyes about 5 or 6 hours later, all the monks had gone. It was early in the morning. Ajahn Chah had left a long time ago. He'd just been in his first deep, blissful meditation experience. He'd stopped. That's a good time to stop this talk.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
So, a little bit of a deeper talk tonight. I didn't know what I was going to talk about, but anyway, about being free. When you want something more, you can't enjoy what you already have. So anyway, we got a few questions over here, and then from the audience sitting in this room. Okay, question from Poland. Dziękuję, from Poland. Is the goal of every person who practices Buddhism freedom from suffering? The goal of a person who practices Buddhism or doesn't practice Buddhism is freedom from goals. It's the goals which cause the suffering. Because what is a goal anyway? Here you are and that's where you want to be. Somewhere else. You have a goal in life. So you always have to be moving and stretching and striving. Imagine if you didn't have any goals in life. If you stopped. Just for a few moments. Give it a try. Instead of our modern world always going places. Goals. The goals of the governments and political parties and other people. Where's that ever got us? It's almost ruining this planet and our life. When you were young, I mean many of you are young like me now, but now when you were really young, what goals did you have in life? And sometimes the goal just to be in this moment and enjoy. What do you really need? And sometimes our goals are never ever fulfilled. One goal leads to another. It's never enough. So we have a whole life of setting more goals for ourselves. And of course, for many people, if they're in the Abrahamic religions, the goal is to go to heaven. Is there one? Buddhists, the goal is to go to Nirvana. You know what Nirvana is? You've got any idea where you're going? Do you really want to get there and be there? You've got a goal, you're not quite sure what the destination is going to be. So anyway, so a lot of times we have goals, just like lemmings, just following other people, thinking when we get there, then it must be fine. So many other people are going there. Over in Bodhinyana Monastery, I had a hut once which overlooked the Southwest Highway. On a Friday, when my predecessor Ajahn Jacquo was up here teaching, I'd watch all these cars. You can see the headlights go down the Southwest Highway, going south, Margaret River to Bunbury or whatever, going away from the weekend. And then on a Sunday night, I'd see all these headlights going back again. I said, what on earth? What are you doing that for? So they had goals. And me, I was just sitting there, just doing nothing, just watching them go this way, go that way. So what do you want to achieve in life? What do you want to achieve in death? What is your goal? It's one of the reasons why that a person who is wise, if you found that bottle and you rubbed it and a genie came out and they said, I'll give you 3 wishes. And what would you say? I'd say, nick off, get out of here. That's my first wish. No, you got no wishes. What do you want? Aren't you happy right now? What do you want? I've heard this from a Middle Eastern man who told me the worst curses in the Middle East. If you want to curse somebody, I'm not encouraging you to curse people, but at least they have a bit of class to their curses, if you can call it class. But the second worst curse was to wish somebody, may the fleas of 1,000 camels infest your armpits. I don't know why I remember that. But I thought at least it was, you know, it had a little bit of colour to it. But they said the worst curse you could give somebody was, may you get everything you want as soon as you want it. Think about that. May you get everything you want as soon as you want it. For many people, it's their life is about the tension between where they are and where they want to be. And it's never bridged. And that's what they feel is the purpose of goals. They delight in that tension of striving, of having a goal. It's like an addiction to a drug, always hoping for something in the future, rather than just being here, instead of going somewhere, of actually appreciating who you are, rather than wanting yourself to be different. Just celebrating this moment, rather than trying to change it. Try it, see what it's like to stop. Stop going and be. I travel around a lot. Big cities, Bangkok, I was there recently. Have you been to Bangkok? There's hardly any human beings there. All human goings, human doings. Hardly anyone actually being. You understand what I mean, don't you? Singapore, so many people doing things there. How many people are actually being? Instead of going somewhere. Anyway, that's the first question. I better carry on with the other ones, otherwise. Is freedom better preserved with more rules like the Vinaya or with less? These rules, they're just, to me, they're common sense. You know, why would we want to hurt anybody? So it's like freedom, giving the gift of freedom from fear to other beings. So you can come into this place and feel that no one's going to exploit you, no one's going to hurt you, no one's going to judge you, no one's going to criticize you, no one's going to say, oh, the entry is free but you have to pay to get out. No, it's not cheating on people, just caring for people. So all the rules like the monks and nuns rules, they're all just common sense, acts of kindness. So those of you who, you know, hang around these Buddhist groups long, you hear things about 5 precepts. What are the 5 precepts? It's just basically just 2 precepts. Not doing anything which harms another being, not doing anything which harms yourself. That's all. Those are the precepts. Those are the rules. Not harming yourself, not harming others. Pretty common sense. So why would you want to drink alcohol? Take drugs, it just harms you. You don't need those things to be happy. Why would you want to steal or kill or anything? It just harms others. Harms yourself. It's all the rules. We live simply. Why? Because we don't harm so many people living simply. It makes life so much easier. So, to me, the rules, to me, it's common sense. Anyway, so freedom, the two freedoms in this world, freedom of desire, to do whatever you want, whenever you want it. That's what happens when you're wealthy and powerful. I do whatever I want, whenever I want. And the other one, that's not much freedom. The real freedom is the freedom from desire. You don't need anything. You're just happy with the people around you, they're good enough, they're nice friends. Freedom with just this moment. The freedom when you don't want anything else in the whole world, just to be with the person sitting next to you. Just to be here. It may not be the best place, but it's good enough to relax and rest and appreciate the situation you're in. Anyway, do longer meditations lead to more freedom? Does the length of time you meditate each day really matter? Does the amount of time you eat really matter? The time you rest really matter? You can't say this. Find a middle way, just so you have enough time to... You know, don't meditate, just learn how to be peaceful. Because sometimes meditation is one of the other chores we have to do. Just like brushing our teeth, just like exercising, it's good for your health. Gonna meditate because I'm a monk. Now just make the meditation much deeper. In other words, just learn how to be here. Make peace, be kind, be gentle with this moment. And it's only a moment. So time, long, short, doesn't really make much sense to me. So you meditate. Only in the moment, and enjoy it. People used to ask me, when is the best time to meditate? What's the answer? When's the worst time to meditate? Later on. So nice little simple thing. So you just have this timeless, you're here, so you meditate. So anyway, any questions from the very patient people who have been sitting here?
Yes, listening? I have a question.
Yeah, okay, great.
Thank you for the talk. Good as always, been coming for 20 years. This is a question relating to what you just said about the Buddhist precepts and not to harm any being.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering why it is that so many people that follow Buddhism and don't fully grasp that subject in the sense of they're literally paying people to harm other beings in the meat, egg and dairy industry. Do you know why people don't seem to get that understanding that they're actually causing harm and they pay people to do that even though they don't see it?
Yeah, we try again. Being perfect is so difficult. So we're trying not to harm other people, other beings. But even like life, there's always some harm involved in life. You just being here is an expense of so many others. So we try and limit the harm as much as we possibly can. You're just driving here or going in public transport. Sometimes we do step on animals, little bugs on the ground. I remember going to Christmas Island, and it was the time when they had the red crabs, and just asking my driver, please drive slowly, please try and avoid them. But he couldn't. There are swarms. So we do try not to harm us. We're involved as well, as best we possibly can. But one of the reasons I'm not getting into trouble on this is, can we have simpler lifestyles? Can we have even less people? Can we have just less needed to eat? Whatever it is, less rather than more. We have now, oh, I'm going to get political now, we have so-called refugees, which we're afraid of, taking jobs, taking this, oh, come on. Just, you know, one of the, at least I always mention this story, there was a Vietnamese refugee many years ago. When he managed to get to the Australian shore, the first people he met were these two Aussie fishermen. You know, this was a fellow who just, I don't know what suffering he'd been through with his other people on the boat. And the two Aussies shouted out to him, "Welcome to Australia, mate! Have a beer!" And he always remembers that. It wasn't just, you know, send him to be interrogated to a refugee camp or processing or whatever. Just, "Welcome to Australia, mate, have a beer." And he is now currently the governor of South Australia. Those are stories which I love. So that is welcoming people, welcoming everybody. So that's, please try your very best to limit whatever you can do and share our planet with others. So sometimes we do these things out of fear, fear of the other. So, yes?
Thank you, Ajahn Bhan, for your talk today. As a parent, how do I strive for freedom from want and reconcile that with wanting the best for your child, wanting best education, dare I say, a comfortable life? The want is there.
Yes. It's find out what the children need. You want, you think you know what your child wants. There was a little story of a child, maybe 8, 9, 10 years of age, who wrote a little essay in his school, "What I want to be when I grow up." And he said what he wants to be when he grows up is an iPhone. So why do you want to be an iPhone? He said, "Well, my daddy spends so much time on the iPhone. Even just during the dinner time, he will take the calls. Even when I'm trying to play with him, he's got another call on his iPhone. My daddy spends so much time with my iPhone when I want him to spend time with me. So when I grow up, I want to be an iPhone to spend time with my daddy." Do you get it? Sometimes we think we're doing the best. We've got very good kindness, compassion, but sometimes the wisdom is lacking. Ask your kid what they want. A lot of times just being with the people they love, that's enough for them. At least it's really important, that's what's lacking anyway. Okay.
Well, Ajahn Brahm.
Oh, yeah. Well,
yes.
Yeah. Eddie.
Yeah, Ajahn Brahm, thanks for the wonderful talk. Yeah. Just now, when you mentioned about freedom, you know, from fear,
yeah,
it struck me, and I was thinking of freedom from fear, freedom from worry, and freedom from desire too, isn't it? Yeah. So this fear, worry, desires, they are our feelings, you know.
Yeah.
Our feelings caused by our mind, you know. The Buddha was saying, our mind is a forerunner of all states. Don't you think mindfulness, you know, of the four foundations of mindfulness can help overcome this? You know?
That's an interesting question, because the Buddha said, no. Mindfulness is not enough. You need kindness as well. That's in this wonderful little sutta, Manipadayaka Sutta. And where it's mindfulness, just being aware. You need to have the kindness as well, the compassion, the gentleness. Otherwise you get these terrible things, you see. I don't know if they're true, I've only sort of seen it reported. You have like mindfulness being taught to military soldiers so they can shoot more accurately. Is that what mindfulness is about? But anyway, so you need the kindness there, the compassion, not just being aware, but being able to connect with the other being and getting this beautiful kindness, not fear. It's wonderful that when you have mindfulness together with kindness, that animals aren't afraid of you. Snakes aren't afraid. Anyway, that's another total different story. Okay, so mindfulness and kindness. So please practice both. Okay, so now we can pay respects to Buddha Dhamma Sangha and then we can stop.
Patipano Bhagavata.